Thank you. Well, I'll begin by reviewing how the quantum version of geometric language duality comes about in gauge theory, following the work with Ed Witten. And then I'll describe another, slightly different approach to the same question, which in some sense explains why quantum geometric language deserves to be called quantum. That is, from a mathematical viewpoint, it's a sort of deformation of a usual geometric language duality by some parameter, but why should the parameter be called the Planck constant? And well, we'll see that actually there's an approach to this duality in which the parameter is indeed identified simply with the Planck constant of the gauge theory. So there's a clear interpretation. I'll try to explain what in the quantum, I also like to argue that in the quantum version of geometric language duality, surface operators introduced by Gukov and Witten really play an important role. So without them, there's not much structure there. So let me begin by reviewing part of the paper with Ed Witten on which deals with quantum geometric language duality. So we start with n equals 4 super Youngnells and perform a twist and get a topological field theory in 4 dimensions, actually a family of topological field theory labeled by a complex parameter T. Well, really it takes values in TP1. The twist is the same for all T, but the different theories differ by how you choose the Beres T charge. So, n equals 4 super Youngnells has both left-handed and right-handed supersymmetries, and under the GL twist, which is left-right symmetric, you get one scalar supercharge from left-handed supersymmetry and one from the right-handed ones. So, and you can take any linear combination of these two. You can parameterize, for example, like that. Well, of course, you know, you also need to include points t equals 0 and t equals infinity, where t equals infinity, your q is simply the right-handed part of right, purely right-handed, and t equals 0 is purely left-handed. Now, the theories are actually, well, if you fix e squared, the theory also has parameters. So what are the parameters? We have a parameter t, we have the gauge coupling squared, which can be thought of also as the Planck constant in the gauge theory, and also have the theta angle. Well, if you fix e squared and theta, then the properties of the theory are very different for different values of t. On the other hand, we look at it a bit differently. You can ask what is the relevant parameter in the topological gauge theory, and it's actually some combination of t, e squared, and theta. In principle, the theory depends only on this combination, so one can look at it in different ways. This parameter is sort of the relevant parameter is this one. But if you fix theta and e squared, then you get different theories for different values of t. But you can also actually get equivalent theories for different values of t if you allow to vary theta and e squared. Now, the usual geometric language duality, classical. If you want to get classical geometric language duality, you fix some particular values of this t and e squared and theta. So, the way to explain the paper, to get classical geometric language, you take t equals I. Well, at this value, actually, the values of e squared and theta don't matter at all. Cycles infinity. And you also take values t equals 1. Well, we also have the gauge group as a parameter, sort of. Let's take group G, and here is going to be, well, here's going to be Langlands dual G, and here's going to be G. Well, for t equals 1, the values of parameters do matter, so you have to choose some special parameter. And let's state it, choose theta angle to be 0. Then, as duality relates this to topological twists, if you compactify the theory on a Riemann surface, in either case, well, in topological field theory, as usual, well, in topological field theory, you, in four-dimensional topological field theory, you associate a vector space to a three-dimensional manifold, and if you look at the two-dimensional manifold, like compact manifold like C, you get a category. You associate the number to four-dimensional manifold, vector space, to three-dimensional manifold, and the category to two-dimensional manifold. This category is the category of brains in the theory, in the four-dimensional theory compactify on this Riemann surface. So, so these categories must be the same if the topological equivalent of the topological field theories are isomorphic. And well, in this particular case, turns out that the relevant categories are B brains on the moduli space of Hitchin. In this case, for the Langlands dual group, and here we get A brains on the moduli space of Hitchin, which is some space of solution of differential equations, which were written down already in previous lectures. Well, you have also to specify the complex structure. This is a hyperkeller manifold, but the relevant complex structure here is what's called J. It's the one in which this moduli space, which is a complex manifold, is a moduli space of flat connections. Complex connection on C. And here you have to choose some other complex structure called K in the paper. Well, it was claimed basically this omega K can read explicitly. Well, the Hitchin equations are equations for gauge field and a Higgs field. So, in one natural symplectic form you can write down there is like this. It's exact and independent of the choice of it, like any choices due to the topological formula. Okay. So, and then to get from this statement to something closely related to mathematics, you need to make a further step. So, from the category of A brains, one argues that you can get to D modules on the moduli, in physics, what you get is a moduli space of stable G bundles, but mathematically, we probably prefer to have a stack of G bundles that you shouldn't restrict only to stable bundles. So, how does this come about? This is not really a completely well defined arrow, so we only know how to define it physically on the moduli space of stable bundles, but nevertheless. So, what you do is you consider, let me explain how to proceed here. So, this one, that's duality, and this is two, some other things. So, what you do here is you consider some particular special A brain on the moduli space, on the Hitchin moduli space, which is called canonical kazotropic A brain. This brain is actually a line bundle in the Hitchin moduli space. Kazotropic here refers to the fact that the manifold itself, you have a symplectic manifold, can sort of as kazotropic submanifold in itself. And the curvature you take for this brain is to be chosen, well, it's proportional to this the complex structure omega j, which does depend on the choice of complex structure on the curve C. It's basically this. So, well, you fix the coefficient here so that if you take the Kähler form relevant on complex structure K and take the ratio of omega and F, you get a complex structure. And that's clearly satisfied here, and the complex structure is actually simply I. And in this complex structure, the Hitchin moduli space is the same as the moduli space of Higgs bundles, of semi-stable Higgs bundles on C. And, well, to get from an A brain to a D module, what one needs to consider the open strings which begin and end on this particular A brain. And all of the Hitchin moduli space. So I just need to, so the idea is the following. So you would attach, well, naively, you have the algebra of open strings on the A brain, and to any other A brain, you can attach a module of open strings which begin on your chosen A brain and end on this brain. Okay. So another, well, in the category language, simply the fact that morphisms from one object to another are always a module of endomorphisms of the second object. Now. No, there's, well, the B field is on the manifold, not on the brain, right? So there's a curvature of the line bundle. That's what I mean. It's a curved. Well, here the B field in general, in the B field in general is this. So if we turned off the theta angle, then there is no B field. And actually, I'll be talking about this a bit later. So okay, so if there's no B field, the equation I have to satisfy is this. And you can solve it by taking F to be omega j. Okay. You see, omega is proportional to omega k. So the actual Kähler form is imaginary part of tau. Well, the way one usually introduces this parameter. In principle, it's not the most relevant parameter in this case because the relevant parameter is psi, but anyway, let's use the usual parameter. And the Kähler form actually in this complex structure is proportional to omega k. So what I have to do is basically take F to be imaginary part of tau times omega j. Then the ratio of omega k and omega j is I. Okay. So you solve the equation. So it's a valid brain and the algebra of functions on this brain. Well, first of all, turns out that this complex structure has the following role. If you look at observables on a brain, in principle, they're just functions. Well, they're functions on the submanifold, in this case, the whole manifold, but it should also be complex. So actually, in this complex structure I, it just follows from the analysis of the diversity transformations. So observables on this brain are holomorphic functions on the moduli space of Higgs bundles regarded as a complex manifold. But moreover, the algebra observables turns out to be non-commutative. This is basically the usual fact that when I have a curvature on the brain, then the algebra of boundary observables is non-commutative. So, as a result, so what is this non-commutativity? Well, to understand it, the corresponding non-commutativity comes like this. So you have two functions, right? And the commutator to leading order is It simply turns out to be, if you just look at the path integral, the usual basic argument, is the Poisson bracket of f and g with with respect to the complex structure called omega I, homomorphic symmetric form omega I. Yes. Yeah. Wait. Yeah. I mean. So I mean that works. So so the point is that and what is this? Okay. So this is. Plus dot dot dot. Sorry. So this is the leading order. So what is this homomorphic symmetric form? Well, it's the one in, well, if you restrict to those Higgs bundles, for which also the underlying G bundle is stable, then this guy, well, this guy contains the tangent bundle to the moduli space of stable G bundles. It's not just like this. And, sorry? Yeah, right. Well, you can think of it as a, yeah, also subset of T star of this guy. Right. So so basically we're taking the holomorphic function on this space, but regard it as a non-commutative space. And the corresponding complex symmetric form is simply, when you restrict to this subset, it's simply the standard symplectic form on T star of the of anything. So you just have to, well, so quantization of this thing is standard. You just promote your functions to on total space to differential operators on the base. So that's how. So this is holomorphic symplectic form. Let's see. It's yeah. So well, it's omega k plus well, omega j plus omega k or the other one. Maybe the other way around. I also confused which one is this. Well, that's so this sort of coordinate on the base, differential coordinate on the base, is on the fiber in the usual complex structure. Okay. So in this complex structure, the quantization is straightforward because you're just quantizing cotangent bundle. So the algebra of functions then should be the algebra of differential operators on this space, okay? And then to any A, sorry? Here, you just, well, okay. So there is some ambiguity here as usual. When you quantize, you can twist by a line bundle. And indeed, the most natural choice, if you quantize T star of some manifold, the most natural choice is not differential operators on, just in functions, but on square root of the canonical bundle on the base, which here is non-trivial. So indeed, it's some sort of shift, it's sort of subleading effect if you wish in H bar. So but actually not terribly important here. Okay. So anyway, so to any A brain, then you attach some modulo this all this algebra differential operators. Well, in practice, you have to, this algebra is not very large, so you don't get very much information this way. You have to promote this algebras to shifts of algebras. And the idea is you can define open strings locally in the target space in some cases. So I won't go through this, it's discussed in the paper, but really you have to consider observables, which are functions of the space, which are perhaps only locally defined on the base. The polynomial on the fiber coordinates, but they're perhaps only locally defined on the base. So really you have to deal with this shiftified observables to get, and they form a form a shift on the base, and then the shift is naturally identified with the shift of differential operators on homomorphic functions on the base or on maybe a line bundle, well, actually, square root of canonical line bundle on the base. To do what?
Yeah.
Right. Well, nothing really is different. If you can argue that your path integral localizes on constant maps, and it does here, like in a B model, you could do that. It's absolutely no problem. Here it's A model. It seems a bit unusual that you can shiffify it. But in fact, you can because of the of this presence of this magnetic field on the brain. So whenever the I mean, in the B model, it doesn't matter anyway. It always localizes near constant maps. It makes perfectly fine sense to consider maps which are just look at everything locally. So, perturbation theory in general is not exact thing. So if you, if you limit to perturbation theory also, then it's always okay to perturbation theory in the sense of large volume limit. Then it's always okay to shiffify. So that this sort of thing you do when, for example, you just when you can do it even for closed strings if you look in the large volume limit. You can define the shift of sort of local observables there as well. So this relation with chiral Durham, for example, complex and twisted closed string models is based on that. So if you, of course, in the actual exact answer gets conversion of instantons, which cannot be understood in terms of large volume expansion. But when now you're doing perturbation theory, you can do this. So now what changes if you so how to get from this to quantum Langlands? Well, the way it was explained in the paper was the following. So let's now consider, let's abandon the t equals I, just look at t equals 1, an arbitrary theta. And then the exponent parameter psi here is simply theta over 2 pi. So now, so in this case, the only difference is that you have still have the A model in the same complex structure, but you also have a B field. The B field I already wrote, it's minus theta over 2 pi omega pi. So the equation, well, to find some analog of the canonical quasitropic brain, you have to solve this same kind of similar equation. But now you shift F to F plus B. And the way you solve it, well, omega is proportional to omega k, so the way you solve it, you basically take the same solution, but you scale it a little bit. And if you do that, then the corresponding complex structure, the relevant one, is some linear combination of complex structure I and the other complex structure, so J. Some coefficients alpha and beta. Well, alpha and beta square to 1. So what changed? Well, at first, well, not very much, actually. So that's our new canonical quasitropic A brain. And so again, your interest. Well, this this moduli space of Hitchin with respect to this strange let's call this something. it's some complex structure which depends on theta. When theta is zero, it's simply I, but when theta is non-zero, it's some mixture of I and J. Yeah, they're functions of the tau, or both gauge coupling and the theta angle. Yeah, they're fixed, uniquely fixed basically by the requirement this is a complex structure. So you know what alpha, so you know what beta is, because it's just omega inverse B. And so anyway, so you have this now, the same moduli space, but in a different complex structure. So the algebra of functions here, well, what is this thing? Well, in complex structure I, it was a cotangent bundle. So in complex structure I theta, it's, well, one way to say, well, in this complex structure, it's the moduli space of flat lambda connections. Put some non-zero lambda on complexified group. So if theta is vanishing, you just get back the Higgs bundle. But if theta is not vanishing, it's some lambda connection with some non-vanishing lambda. Now, in other words, well, what is this thing? Well, again, we can consider a pair, a bundle, and the lambda connection on it, and sort of project to bundles. So this guy is not—it's not a cotangent bundle anymore, but it's a kind of twisted cotangent bundle. So it's a bundle over the moduli space of G bundles. It's a twisted cotangent bundle over the same guy. It's twisted because it's actually not a vector bundle. It's an affine bundle. As you go from chart to chart, your fibers undergo affine transformation. So lambda is a, no, it's an honest number. Yeah, actually, it's in the paper. I didn't copy it. Some function. Yeah, beta is proportional to it. Well, there's also gauge coupling in the game. So it's theta divided, it's real part of tau, but divided by imaginary part of tau. So it's for small gauge coupling, it's actually very small. So beta is a real part of tau divided by imaginary part of tau. So it's like omega is imaginary part of tau times omega k. So actually, beta is actually quite small for small gauge coupling. So omega tau is 4 pi. Okay. Oh, sorry. It is. Sorry. Omega is proportional to imaginary part of tau. So it's in the numerator. Here it is. Denominator, I mean. Well, lambda connection is basically the same. Well, when you define a connection, right? So say you have some operator, del, from sections of a bundle to section of a bundle tensor one forms, and usually, well, you're subject to the constraint that the Leibniz rule, right? So some function times a section, usually, right, it's this plus this, where this is the usual differential, so you just put the lambda here. Yeah. So you just put the lambda here, just put lambda connection. It's the same. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, some people multiply. Yeah. Right. Okay, so So anyway, the twisted cotangent bundle is, well, they're classified. No, I just mean, okay, so I mean it's an affine bundle. So imagine, so suppose you have a, no, it's an affine, it's an affine bundle. Oh, okay, so a fine bundle, so bundle with functions are affine. So it's, if you have, say, some coordinate, local coordinates, P and Q, so on one chart, and on the other chart, they're related, not, well, you don't get this, you get extra homogeneous term, which is some one form, I don't know, gamma, alpha, beta. So this guy, it's check one cochain with values in one form on the base. So if you want this actually, in addition to be a symplectic manifold, you want this one form to be closed, of course. So actually, okay, so anyway, that's what I mean by twisted cotangent bundle. So it's some symplectic manifold, which locally looks like just cotangent bundle with canonical symplectic form, but globally have this. The symplectic potential is not globally defined. Symplectic form is. So, so quantization of this in principle is also straightforward. So if you have a twisted cotangent bundle, then you simply, yeah, just consider twisted differential operators. So if you think about what's the difference between differential operators on a function and on a section of a line bundle, then there's not much difference. I mean, locally, they're exactly the same. The difference is how the partial derivatives transform under going from chart to chart. The difference is precisely this, right? And actually, if you have if you have differential operators on a line bundle, then this class here is simply the check representative of the first churn class. Okay? Of course, here there's no quantization condition. I could multiply this by any number, it's still okay, right? So in that sense, it makes sense to talk about differential operators and some power of the line bundle. It just differential, well, locally look like shift of differential operators on the functions, but globally they differ by this cocycle, which is lambda times the cocycle, times the first churn class of the line bundle. Okay. So anyway, it's straightforward generalization of quantization of the cotangent bundles. And well, it turns out that in the end, so the algebra, well, so get the sheaf of differential operators on, well, actually, in this case, there are not many, well, the second cohomology in the absence of ramifications is just one-dimensional. So this class, they're all proportional to some particular class, the churn class of the determinant line bundle. So the result can be interpreted as this determinant line bundle, total not, to the power, to the power, actually the state over 2 pi. Minus the dual Coxeter number. That comes from this shift that even if theta equals 0, the most natural thing is not a trivial line bundle, but the square root of the canonical line bundle. That's where we get this shift. See? So this is some function of lambda. So I didn't write what lambda is. But this is basically lambda. Okay. What determines line bundle? You get a shift of differential operators on this line bundle. Well, yeah, what do you get? Yeah, the shift of differential operators on this power of the line bundle. The power. Okay, fine. So now you can just call it the psi. It's your power psi, and then yeah. Okay. In this particular case. And then, what does Langlands, what does S duality say? Well, as duality, it maps psi to minus 1 over psi. Okay? Yeah, times, well, for a general group, you have some number here, which is 1, 2, or 3, depending on the maximal multiplicity of the edges in the Dynkin diagram. So, so what can we say? Well, unfortunately, it also maps t to some other value. It's some phase which depends on e squared and theta. So, but we should, well, so it looks like we're not starting with a situation like that and apply S duality, we don't get in the same situation. But you can sort of argue that it doesn't matter because the random parameter is psi. So, so even you have get a different value of t and different values of e squared and theta, if the parameter of psi is like this, then you always get the same category. So from this, it's not the most natural thing to do, but nevertheless, you get a statement that if you identify the category of A brains with category of sheaves of modules over this sheaf of differential operators, you then conclude there should be some equivalence between such categories when psi is related like this in G's replaceable Englund's dual. Okay? Although it's not the most natural thing to do. Okay? So the statement then that you get from this is that categories of sheaves of twisted D modules for group and Englund's dual are equivalent if the twisting parameters are related like this. Okay, so, but it's not as, well, so one thing is, why is it called, well, that's basically a statement of quantum geometric Langevin at the most rough level, but first of all, why is it called quantum? So, I mean, usually one calls this guy, mathematical literature, this kind of quantization parameter, this is H bar. But when in physics, it's just theta angle, you don't call it the Planck constant. And the second, it's kind of not very natural. We don't get actually, from S duality, we don't get equivalence of these two guys on the nose. You get equivalence between two categories, and then there should be some extra equivalence thing to do with the fact you can deform T and E squared without changing the categories. It's not the most natural statement. So, okay. And the last thing, which is unsatisfactory, is that for general theta angles, there are no Ed-Hooft operators in the theory. So you can't, well, you can't say anything about this equivalence except that there is such an equivalence. And for example, in the usual case, classical Englunds, you have Wilson operators and Ed-Hooft operators, and S-duality exchanges them. Here, there's nothing like that because there's just no Ed-Hooft operators. So let's see if we can do a little bit better. When the last part actually it can be difficult to correct, but let's see what a better approach, I think. So sort of explains better what's going on here. So this approach explained in a short paper that I put on the archive in November. So that is to consider a self-dual point, namely t equals 0. So for t equals 0 is a point, and also t infinity is a case when the topological filter is mapped by its duality basically to itself. So the only difference is that the gauge group is replaced by the dual group, but it's the same topological twist. So it's better suited to this sort of situation where the two sides of the duality looks very similar. This theory has a rather, well, as I said, in this case, Q, the Beer's two operator, is simply the purely left-handed. The theory, in some sense, is sort of chiral, breaks parity, if you wish. And you can see that, for example, when you ask, the Beer's two operator, I won't write it down for here, but for example, the action of the theory, some Beer's two exact term, plus instanton term, like this. And as a result, the correlators all depend holomorphically on the tau bar, where tau, as usual, is in for example, instantons in principle contribute to the partition function. Now, well, actually, more precisely, what the theory localizes on is not instantons. In this theory, there are a bunch of fields. And what's relevant, well, besides the gauge field, there's also a Higgs 1 form field. And everything localizes on more complicated equations. Instead of the equation that self-dual part of F is zero, you get more complicated equation, which also knows the Higgs one form field. And you also get equation like this. Well, and also the equation said that, well, this way. So instantons certainly satisfy this equation, but could be also other solutions. So now this particular value of t is actually, well, in some sense, more closely related to the setup which was adopted in one of the first papers on this topological twisting of gauge theories and reduction in, for example, Dershatsky, Sadov, Johansson, and Waffa, and Harvey, Moore, and Strominger, in that, well, because in this case, what you get is the under reduction for manifold is C times R2, you get an A model. So the topological filter reduces to an A model with a target Hitchian moduli space, well, the Higgs bundle moduli space. In other words, in complex structure I. So this is the complex structure in which the Kähler form is not exact. So by the usual logic, you want to, from this you get a statement that S-duality relates A-brains on this moduli space of Higgs bundles with A-brains on Higgs bundle moduli space for the dual group. And all it does, it acts non-trivially, besides replacing group with the dual group, is it, well, it also acts non-trivially on the Kähler form on this moduli space. So the category of A-brains depends on the Kähler parameter. So what is the Kähler parameter here? Well, so the Kähler parameter here, that is B plus I omega, is minus tau bar times omega I. It's non-trivial. It's a, well, non-trivial class in second cohomology. In general, a complex one. If there is, well, if the B field vanishes, then, well, if the theta angle vanishes, then it's purely imaginary, but in general, it's complex. And what does, well, we can parameterize this Kähler class by single complex number, this one. And as duality maps, maps tau to Langlands dual value, which is minus one and tau. So, well, if you have, say, so you can think of it as a inversion of the volume, simply of the, so it's the usual t-duality. So you have a field theory which depends on the sigma model, which depends on the volume of the target space, and S-duality is basically t-duality. Replace volume with one over volume. So, okay, so we want to relate this statement to something more, well, something more like here, to some shifts of modules over the shift of differential operator, twisted differential operators. And for that, we need a canonical quadratropic A brain, something like that. So, analog of CC brain. Well, again, the equation, well, here there's a slight problem. So, if you, for general values of theta angle, there is no analog of canonical quadratropic A brain, unlike the case of, which we discussed before. So, So let's set theta to 0. So in this case, so you choose F to be imaginary part of tau times omega k. But it doesn't work if theta is non-zero, just there's no solution to the equation you need to solve in general for F. And then the corresponding complex structure, so let's call this guy, let's say DC brain, a distinguished quasitropic brain. So there's always a CC, there's a DC, and so there's also the AC, I guess, if there's a DC. And then that's the one which Sergey used in his talk. So this guy is yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So this is, for example, this was an ABA brain. The DC brain is AAB brain. And there's also the BAA brain, which are these. So they're all the different creatures. So the choice of this brain, incidentally, does depend on the choice of complex structure on C. So omega k is independent of any complex structure choices on our curve C. And by the way, so is this omega I. So the equation you have to solve is this one. It doesn't, if B is non-zero, it doesn't solve that. Actually, there's no way to fix this. I'm talking about, so these equations cannot be solved for general theta because quantization for F is violated.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, right. For general theta, it doesn't work. But my theory depends on two parameters, theta and the gauge coupling. The gauge coupling is now important. So I can set theta to zero, but still play with the gauge coupling. So I can, this is basically, this, then I will have large volume, small volume duality. So there's no way, well, on the level of A brains, I can also include theta. But if you want to relate to D modules, then I can't. So, no, they don't. No, they depend on which. Well, okay, sorry. Here they don't again. Whenever you have a non-degenerate gauge on the brain, on the disk, you can show that there are no everything works on constant maps again. So you can simplify here as well. Okay. So I mean, that doesn't, the only thing it depends on is they have some quasitropic brain and the gauge field on the brain is non-degenerate to form, which is true here as well. So, so what is the relevant complex structure here? So the relevant complex structure is simply J, okay? This is the one in which the Hitchian moduli space is identified with the moduli space of complex flat connections. So, in a complex structure J, the moduli space of Hitchin, same as the moduli space of flat connection, complexified gauge group, and so the algebra of functions of observables on the DC brain is the quantization of homomorphic functions on the moduli space of flat connections. So, by the way, so the problem of quantization of the moduli space of complex flat connections has received some attention past, well, both actually in the, also in the real case. So this papers of Falk and Rosley and also Falk and Goncharov considered that, but from different viewpoints. They looked at them. Their goal was to construct some, well, first of all, to construct some nice set of generators for the classical algebra, write down Poisson, nice set of coordinates, sorry, for this moduli space in which the Poisson bracket looks nice, and then quantize this algebra. It didn't matter very much whether, by the way, it was a real or complex group for them, and then construct some representations of this algebra. Now, from here, we have some different viewpoint. We have a sort of sheaf of we should quantize the sheaf of homomorphic functions on this manifold and consider a sheaf of modules over there. And that should give you the category, well, that sheaf of modules should be the same as A brain. So, with what? The only relation is that they quantize the moduli space of flat connections, and we also need to quantize here, but what do you mean by quantization here is a bit different. When you construct representations, I think it is important. When you just write down the algebra. Yeah, for the when you construct representations, and here we don't want to construct representations of the algebra of globally defined observables, globally defined functions. We just want to quantize the sheaf, so it's a bit different problem. By the way, note that this description of the category of A brains doesn't make any reference to the complex structure on C. That's purely topological. You can include Markov points as well. I guess I won't have time to speak about that. Okay. The story easily extends to ramifications. So the same thing that you get is that, well, this guy is also a twisted cotangent bundle. At least it contains twisted cotangent bundle. Again, if you restrict to, well, you sort of have projections to all bundles just by forgetting about which connection you choose. But then, if you restrict to the preimage of, well, if you look at those bundles which are stable, then you get really a potential bundle to this stable version of that. So, okay. And what's the corresponding twist? There's some class here in the second cohomology which describes what this cotangent bundle is, determines the quantization. The class that you get here, the class is actually, usually you would say that the class is basically the class of the determinant line bundle here. But the class actually gets another factor simply because the symplectic form that we're quantizing is multiplied by imaginary part of tau. So in the end, the quantization then gives you sheaf of differential operators on the same determinant line bundle, same shift, but here we also have I imaginary part of tau. So, what do you mean minus that? So the parameter is a similar result, except in the previous approach we got this quantum parameter was actually real, and here it's purely imaginary. And actually, I don't know how to make it complex in general because of this problem with the DC brain for non-zero B field. But nevertheless, so now the quantum parameter is really. I guess I wanted to say inverse. So the quantum parameter now is really the gauge coupling, and this is the of Planck constant. Is this. So now really the classical limit is the limit when you remove this, basically E squared goes to zero. And S duality simply replaces the group by the dual group and inverts this guy. So and here you don't need to worry about going to different T because S duality preserves this value of T. Okay. Now the other problem that I had is that I wanted to have some sort of loop operators which would act on brains and which would somehow map nicely in a predictable way under S duality. So we can examine what has happened here. So we can look at loop operators. T equals zero. But the issue that arise here are, T equals zero twist is actually very similar to Donaldson-Witten twist of n equals two theory. So much of what I'm going to say is also applies to that theory. Also explain also why nobody discusses loop operators so in this theory. So the answer is actually that there are no loop operators anyway. So turns out only identity operator exists. Well, it's multiple. Okay. So how does it come about? Well, sort of the really pedestrian way is just to try a thing which already worked for different values of T. Try Wilson, finding Wilson operator at Swift operators. So first Wilson operators. They're not Bernstein invariant. So don't work. So why is that? Well, because there's a transformation. Look at act on the connection like this. There's some one-form fermions. There's some one-form Higgses. Actually, unfortunately, there are two different one-form fermions, and there's no way to cook up any connection from a linear combination of A and phi. And in fact, there's no way to cook up connection from anything. You cannot add anything to A, so that the new connection will be Bernstein closed even up to gauge transformation. So there's no Bernstein invariant way to couple quark to a gauge. So as for Swift operators, well, you can imagine looking at some singularity in the gauge fields, which is static and spherically symmetric, and there is the invariant. Well, so a Swift operator is when we have a sort of radial magnetic field. So there, the curvature field, imagine the manifold is R4, and the operator is along sort of the time axis at the origin. Then the sort of magnetic part looks like this. And if this is not Bernstein invariant configuration of fields, we have to BPS equation tells you what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to also turn on sort of electric field. It seems okay, except if you do weak rotation, you realize actually that corresponds to the purely imaginary electric charge. So So this, in other words, it wouldn't be gauge invariant. Gauge invariance requires charge to be real and quantized, and here is not even real, it's purely imaginary. So this guy basically won't satisfy the Gauss law constraint. So as a result, there's no way to cook up any, not only monopole, but any dyne which is Bariston invariant. So now, a more systematic analysis goes like this. So, okay, so we just tried things which work for other values of T. What do we, well, maybe there's something else we can do. A nice way to think about it is the fault, well, to produce something which is more familiar, then, well, looking for loop operators kind of not very familiar. So we know some examples, but how do you construct most general loop operator? Well, in topological field theory, it's fairly simple. So because you can think about this way. This is a, well, category of loop operators is the one which you attach to it, to a sphere. So in other words, you take the four-dimensional topological field theory, reduce on a two-sphere. Sort of the sphere around, at fixed time, the sphere which surrounds your source. And get a two-dimensional topological field theory. And look for brains, that is, there is invariant boundary conditions here. So they form some sort of category, and this is the category of loop operators. Okay. So that's more systematic because we sort of know various tricks how to sort of find a very, very general class of boundary conditions in a two-dimensional topological field theory. Now, one can go through this analysis. Actually, one can go for all values of T and see if it gets anything new there. And the answer is, well, in the case of T equals 1, T equals I, you find the usual at Hooft and Wilson operators. And if t equals 0, you find nothing except the identity. Basically, it turns out, the problem is the same. So the identity operator corresponds to some free boundary conditions for all bosonic fields. You would try to, well, so there is no way to deform this in any way, for example. There's no way to couple any gauge degree of freedom because it must couple to some connection. The connection is not Bariston invariant. So basically, there's no way to mimic any none of the constructions of boundary conditions which go through in two-dimensional case go through here. So there's no way to deform this identity guy, and no way to couple to any boundary degrees of freedom in a non-trivial way. Of course, you can couple to in a trivial way, but then you get just a multiple of the identity operator. So the analysis actually tells the same thing. No, for t equals I, for example, what is actually the topological field theory? For two spheres, it's actually pretty simple. It's first of all, you get basically a trivial target because for t not equals to one, there are no interesting solutions to the equations which define a vacuum on a two sphere. So you just end up with a gauge theory essentially, with 4,4 gauge theory twisted in some way, in two dimensions. And you can now analyze that. For t equals I, we find the same theory, but with a different Bariston charge. With a Bariston charge, which allows you to couple some extra degrees of freedom in a Bariston invariant way to the connection, some particular connection. If t equals 0, there's no Bariston invariant connection, so there's no way to couple anything living on the boundary to the gauge theory in a Bariston invariant way. So, So what's left here? Well, the answer is that, so the thing which do exist are surface operators. I didn't have time to explain how S-duality acts on them here, but basically contained the paper of Gukov and Witten, just specialized in this case. Surface operators do exist, and moreover, you do have, in general, loop operators which live not on empty space, but say the place where, say, three surface operators meet. So, in principle, you could characterize this duality by considering also the action of surface operators, except they don't act on categories by functors. They sort of form a two categories, act by like two functions. You can also consider loop operators which live on their junctions. These do exist in some cases. So. The whole theory depends also on the gauge coupling and the theta angle. And then you can try to characterize the prudence of brains in terms of this action of surface operators. But that requires basically to consider not only the particular Hitchin modulus phase with the ramifications, but also all possible ramifications, how they're connected together. So, namely, that junctions, for example, give you functors from the ket. So, these three surface operators which come together define some sort of, well, they correspond to some of the three different Higgs, three different moduli spaces, and this junction defines a functor from the product of two categories associated with this surface operators to the third one. You have to consider all ramifications at the same time. So it gets fairly complicated. So I'll stop here. I don't know how to, well, A-brains exist for arbitrary value of the B-field, but I don't know how to relate them to D-modules, twisted D-modules, because the analog of the DC-brain doesn't exist. Yeah. For such particular weird twist, yeah. Different from the critical one by the imaginary number.